Welcome to Straight Talk with Dr. L, where we make complex topics about young children, families, parenting, and womanhood simple. Because high-quality knowledge and information about navigating parenting, family, and life should be accessible, digestible, and usable for everyone. Hello, good people. Welcome to Straight Talk with Dr. L. Today, we're going to talk about identifying and defining your tribe. I speak often about my top-notch village, and indeed, my village is most certainly top-notch. But a village and a tribe are not the same. In fact, by definition, they are very different. Per the dictionary, a village is the inhabitants of a collective community, whereas a tribe is a group of people having a common character or interest. My top-notch village is a collective of extremely diverse people who are interconnected. While we may not always understand each other, we are committed to supporting one another, especially if that support is easily given by use of skills in our wheelhouse, our spare keys. Your tribe, however, will not only help and support you, but helping and supporting you is like breathing to your tribe, because your tribe is the group of people who get you immediately, oftentimes without need to explain. Because you and your tribe want, need, and desire the same things. The same things that are important to you are important to your tribe. Your experiences are shared. Your values and beliefs are in alignment. Your dreams are similar. Of all the people in the world, you are most like the people in your tribe. They are your safe space. So, who's your tribe? How do you find these kindred spirits? How do you define them? How do you identify them? How do you recognize them when you see them? The first thing we must acknowledge is tribes are not static. As your values and identity evolve, so will your tribe. And over time, as we develop as women, our identities become more complex and our values become more acute. Therefore, over time, our tribes become more specific and selective. When I was a child, my tribe was my family. They were given to me by birth. The members of my family were not selected based on my identity or values. My experiences with them, however, did contribute to the shaping of my identity and values. Sometimes by exposing me to experience that aligned with the person I was to become, but mostly by illustrating to me a way of life that was opposite of what I wanted for myself in the future. The tribe that I was born into did not match the woman I was to become. Therefore, at 18 years old, I left home, never again to return as a member of that tribe. When I left home as a young woman, I landed at an HBCU, a historically black college or university. At that point in my life, the students at this university were most like me. They were young, Black, gifted, and ambitious. They became my tribe. While I had been Black all of my life, it wasn't until college that I became intentional about understanding how being Black in America had shaped my identity, values, and how I saw the world. Becoming a proud Rattler of Florida A&M University was the first tribe I selected for myself based on my identity and values. I was comfortable with my tribe. Now, as I mentioned earlier, tribes are not static and evolve as our identities become more complex and our values become more acute. So, while at FAMU, I identified with an organization of devastating and phenomenal young women. This identification and pursuit to be a member of their tribe led to my initiation into the Beta Alpha chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, my new tribe. So, when Delta became my tribe, the remainder of the FAMU community became my village, and I was comfortable with my tribe. So much so that I stayed with this tribe from my time in college until the birth of my son at 30. All of my friends and close relationships as a young woman were somehow developed from my association with and membership in this tribe. Well, after I gave birth to my son, my life, values, and distribution of time changed drastically. During that first month of motherhood, I was utterly exhausted. I felt nothing like myself. I loved my child, but I felt nothing like myself. I didn't recognize my body. Things about my body felt foreign to me. I was a stay-at-home mom, and SDK and I were stuck in the house every day. Just me, my baby, and my thoughts. Other than protecting him, feeding him, and keeping him clean, I really didn't know what to do with him. I was a little afraid of how I was feeling, so I made an appointment with my primary care physician. I went into the doctor's office with an infant SDK in a carrier, and I waited to be called. When called, I walked into the small examination room. I set SDK on the floor and I got on the table and I poured my heart out to this doctor. I told this man about how my body and mind were feeling. This was the first time I had uttered these insecurities. His response was to ask me, "Have you always been chubby?" Then he proceeded to lecture me on the benefit of a healthy weight. I was blown. What little energy I had, he had just snatched it out of my soul. I got off his table and picked up SDK's carrier with tears in my eyes. I knew I couldn't go home. Fortunately, I remembered that in Lamaze class and during my maternity photo session, I was told about a place called Parents' Place, a safe place for moms and their babies. Of course, when I heard about Parents' Place initially, I didn't think I would need it because I was going to be supermom just by virtue of being me. However, I filed the information away in my head anyway. And I'm so glad I did. I left the doctor's office and drove teary-eyed to the safe haven of Parents' Place. They took me and SDK in that day with love. Their policy was, regardless of enrollment numbers, they never turned away a mom with a baby 3 months or under, because Parents' Place understood that is such a critical time. The mothers I found at Parents' Place became my new tribe. And Delta became a part of my village. The mothers at Parents' Place shared similar beliefs about parenting and motherhood. And my style of parenting was influenced and shaped while with my tribe. Actually, I still subscribe to attachment parenting as much as one can with a 13-year-old. I stayed with this tribe for 18 glorious months. They were my safe space. While I love the tribe of mothers I developed at Parents' Place, and some are lifelong friends, and together we have watched our babies grow up, I was a military spouse. As such, my life as a mother changed drastically when my soldier was deployed to Iraq. I became the single parent of a toddler. This was new to me. Now I had all the responsibilities of a mother, compounded with the stress of functioning while having a spouse deployed amidst a war. While the mothers at Parents' Place tried to understand, the constant inquiries about my soldier's well-being and the expressions of opinions about the lack of necessity for the war, while well-intended, made daily social exchanges awkward. So the mothers at Parents' Place became a part of my village, and I was a woman without a tribe. While I had been a military spouse for some years by this time, I had never made a deliberate effort to connect with the community of spouses. When I first married, I was a teacher overseas, and Delta was my tribe. I was married, but my lifestyle and social support needs didn't change. Once I relocated back to the United States as a spouse, I would go to places such as the commissary, and I would see a Delta or FAMU license plate or tag, say hello, and I had an instant village or would meet a new member of my tribe. Once I became a mother, I had Parents' Place. You see, being Black, a student, a woman, and a mother were pretty common identities, so those tribes were pretty easy to find. Now, I was an outlier, a less than one percenter. I was the married, single mother of a toddler whose soldier was deployed to a war zone for a year. Where do those people hang out? Apparently, they hang out in playgroups on military installations. I found my new tribe. They embrace me, and I embrace them back. And I begin to identify as a proud military spouse, and still do to some degree, because only a few know what it is like to navigate life as the civilian spouse of an active duty service member. That life ain't for the faint of heart. Trust me, they serve too. This new tribe understood my life circumstance and was able to support me as I adjusted to military life as a new mother. And I was extremely comfortable with my new tribe for a while. Then life happened, and I came to realize that my son had autism spectrum disorder. Life and priorities shifted drastically. My tribe tried to understand and support me, but I no longer felt comfortable. Some things they just didn't get. And at some point, I grew tired of trying to explain. So I was a woman without a tribe, hiding within a tribe. And I did this very well. So well that some people forgot or didn't acknowledge that I was the mother of a child with disabilities. I could tell when this happened because people would make comments about children or people's physical or intellectual abilities. And while I'm sure I'd heard these types of comments before, these careless words were like daggers to my soul now that I was parenting a child with disabilities. Because these careless words gave me a glimpse of the world and the biases my son would have to navigate. In time and due to life, I separated from this tribe completely, and they became a part of my village. So for years, I operated successfully without a tribe, but with a top-notch village. My social capital was enormous because all of my former and extremely influential tribes now fused together to become a vast pool of resources from which I could pull and with which I could share. But I still didn't have a tribe, a completely safe space. Until March 5th, 2017, just 3 years ago. My good girlfriend, Dr. Yurith Bowen, a fellow FAMUan and member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, is a phenomenal middle school special education teacher. She embodies all that a parent could ever ask for from a teacher. She loves her super kids, and she advocates for them as if she had given birth to each of them herself. Her personal conversations often include episodes of her brainstorming new and innovative ways to enhance the learning and lived experience of her super kids and their families. So Yurith decided she was going to start a basketball team at her middle school with her super kids and typically developing middle school students who joined the Best Buddies Club at her school. Now, Best Buddies is an international nonprofit organization that creates opportunities for one-to-one friendships for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Best Buddies is dedicated to ending the social, physical, and economic isolation of people with disabilities. This newly developed basketball team, the Kenmore Middle School Cougars, began competing in basketball games sponsored by Special Olympics Virginia. On Sunday, March 5th, 2017, they were going to be competing in a big tournament, and Yurith invited SDK and me. We went to support my sister friend, his auntie Yurith, and I had no expectation for the day other than celebrating my friend, her super kids, and their families. But the blessing I received that day makes me teary-eyed just thinking about it. SDK and I walked into the gymnasium and took a seat on the bleachers. SDK was immediately excited. At 10 years old, he delighted in seeing the older children play basketball. He screamed in excitement and began to flap his arms. My mama bear shoulders squared and braced myself to shoot a stink eye at anyone who attempted to express annoyance with my cub's expression of joy. But no one stared. Not one person. That had never happened. In 10 years of mothering, that had never happened. As an infant mom, I spent time apologizing. As a toddler and preschool age mom, I spent time defending and fighting. As a seasoned mama bear, I spent time giving extremely effective, quiet looks of warning. Looks that said, "Nothing to see here, folks. Don't say a word about or to my cub, because trust me, you don't want none of his mama." See, SDK has always been a happy-go-lucky child because never far away from him is a mama bear on the ready. And trust and believe, hell hath no fury like me if you come for my cub. I've always been SDK's protector, trying to preserve his happiness and oblivion to biases as long as possible. So I had never been relaxed when I was out with my child for all of my time as a mother. So much so that if you were to observe me and SDK when he was younger, you would see me constantly shadowing him. If he was standing still, I would usually have my hand touching him in some shape, form, or fashion. And it wasn't because I didn't trust SDK. It was because I didn't trust others. I didn't trust others to just let my baby be. We aren't always kind, considerate, thoughtful, or intentional about things we see and don't understand. And I wanted to protect my baby from this. I saw it. I felt it. It was my responsibility to make sure that he didn't. So as I sat in that gym, surrounded by all those families, while my son had the time of his life, I cried. I cried because I immediately trusted these people. They all wanted the same thing I wanted, a safe space for their super kids to just be kids. The kids they were born to be. And for the first time ever as a mom, I let go and I enjoyed the moment. I felt safe. I felt my child was safe. We laughed and celebrated each other's children. SDK went up and talked to people, and no one made exaggerated looks like they couldn't possibly understand what he was saying, or they didn't want to be bothered with trying to decipher what was being said. If he got too close during his excited conversation, they simply took a half step back and continued talking to him. Everyone knew what to do. Where the heck have these people been all of my life? Where were they when I was a new mom with a child with disability? Oh Lord, I needed those people then. I needed this tribe. I needed this population of people. Parents of children with disabilities. That day, I found my tribe. I found my forever tribe. they have always been there, but I had never experienced them collectively. They were the mother in the therapist's office who gave me a knowing and compassionate smile when my son knocked over the tower of blocks in the waiting room. They were the parent who said to me in Target, "My kiddo did that when he was little, when my son would stand on his toes and walk in a circle." They were me. When I saw a mom with her child trying to get her bearing on the plane, and I would get up and offer help because I saw her. I mean, really saw her. Please understand, it's easy to say, well, that's true with all parents. Please don't say that. You see, parents of children with disabilities have what literature describes as hidden responsibilities. Things they must do to navigate life that the rest of the world just doesn't get to see. But these responsibilities are there and they are very real. To simplify, let's say you have two parents living next door to each other in identical houses. They have children in the same grade and the children attend the same school. School starts at 9:15 every morning. One mom has a child named Sarah. Sarah is typically developing. In the other home, the mother has a child named Mary. Mary has a disability. Now, both Sarah and Mary's moms are responsible for getting their children to school at 9:15. Whereas in Sarah's house, her mother has five tasks that she must do between the time she wakes up Sarah and the time they walk out the door to walk to the nearby school. In the identical house right next door, Mary's mom, who is also responsible for getting Mary out of the door, has 15 tasks she must do between the time she wakes up Mary and the time she walks Mary out the door and to the nearby school. These 10 additional tasks that Mary's mom must do are things that are necessary to ensure that Mary has all the tools she needs to function in her school day as a child with disabilities. However, when Sarah's mom walks out the door and Mary's mom walks out the door, the world sees two moms with their children. Not one mom who has five tasks and another who has 15. Those additional 10 tasks are called hidden responsibilities. And while in this scenario, 10 additional tasks may not seem like that much, those 10 additional tasks not only call for Mary's mom to wake up an hour and a half earlier than Sarah's mom, those 10 additional tasks, hour after hour, over the course of parenting, add up. And when you are a new mom, finding your way like new moms must do, those hidden responsibilities can get real rough. And because they are things that others can't see, oftentimes, new moms of children with disabilities don't talk about them openly. Because no one wants to seem like they're complaining about being a mother to their kid. So when I look at a parent of a child with disabilities, I see them. I really see them. I see everything that they have to do to navigate this world to ensure their child has the opportunity to maximize their personal potential. And when I was in that gymnasium that day on March 5th, 2017, I felt as though I was within four walls where everyone there saw me. And I, in turn, saw them. Before that day, I had never been in a room with a collective of parents of children with disabilities. It had always been one here or two there, so I'd never witnessed how we moved and interacted as a culture. That day, I understood the hopes, dreams, desires, and intentions of every person in that gymnasium. My son could scream as loud as he could, and no one turned around. I didn't have to take him outside. I didn't have to explain his actions. He could just be. And because he could just be, I could just be. And because I could just be, I felt peace. And I felt safe. So I cried. I have been blessed with an extremely diverse, top-notch village. And I appreciate them more than my vocabulary would allow me to adequately express. With that said, without a shadow of a doubt, my tribe is parents of children with disabilities. We have shared experiences exclusive to our lives. We understand the quiet looks. We see each other. Again, I say, we really see each other. So, how do you identify your tribe? How do you define your tribe? Your tribe are the people you seek to serve first. They are the people you would stand next to and feel the safest. They are also the people who you know standing in solidarity with them would help make them feel safe. Your tribe are the people you never want to see alone. Therefore, you go to help them first. It goes beyond empathy. You understand them. Really understand them because their lives are most like your life. Their experiences most resonate with your experience. Their identity is most like your identity. So, to illustrate, if I walked into a room and all of my identities were there. I see a Black person. I see a FAMUan. I see a Delta. I see a mother. I see a military spouse. And I see a parent of a child with disabilities. To feel safe or to offer safety, who would I stand next to first? The identity I would stand next to first represents my tribe. parents of children with disabilities. I see you. I am you. I'm with you. And as long as I have breath in my body, you are never alone. Because you are my tribe. Having a tribe is a beautiful thing. We live in a world where it's easy to feel isolated. It is easy to feel like you are the only one. It is easy to feel like no one else understands the obstacles that are in front of you. But having a tribe gives you a space that allows you and the members within your tribe to operate beyond empathy and in a space of true understanding. And in that space of truly understanding someone, of truly getting someone, there is safety. I know who my tribe is. Who's your tribe? Define and identify your safe space. Then seek to serve, preserve, and enhance your tribe. Because strong tribes fuse together to make top-notch villages. And life is easier to navigate when you have a top-notch village. Boom. Who's your tribe? Each week on Straight Talk with Dr. L, I will work through a topic related to young children, families, parenting, or womanhood with my top-notch village, to which you now belong. So, to ensure the topics are relevant to your needs, concerns, and interests, the topics for each episode will be developed based on questions submitted to AskDrL@KinderJam.com. So, shoot me an email at AskDrL@KinderJam.com. And lastly, remember, it takes a village. And if you didn't have one before, you certainly have one now. And together, we got this. Boom! Let's talk again soon.